the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You might have noticed that lifetime income includes planning for retirement. Okay, I mean, obviously, we've talked about that a lot here on the program. And so there you are. You've just retired day one. This is terrific. I don't have to go to work. Day two, I'm bored. Now what? But maybe a more important question is, what happens if the assets you thought you were going to have in retirement didn't actually materialize? Believe it or not, we have another option that we've not really discussed much here on the show that will let you live on much less income, but live well. Now, remember the stock that we've been talking about so far over the weeks here. You can, number one, delay retirement to increase Social Security. Two, you can allow your assets to grow. And one of the ways to continue to contribute to that would be to work part-time. That would be the third choice. Four is another profession. Some people have been wanting to do something else all their lives, and now that they're out of their primary profession, they pick up another one. So there's income from that. But there is another alternative to just delaying retirement or to working in retirement, and that is to live more cheaply by choosing where you decide to live and to retire.
And we have talked about over probably since we started doing this show, John, every single year, there's a number of publications from Forbes to ARP to Money Magazine that does a study and a survey on where are the best places to live. And the interesting thing about these surveys, depending on which one you're reading, whether you're reading Forbes or Money, they analyze things just a little bit differently and they come up with different conclusions. But it's also amazing to see how over time, where they recommend to retire basically changes over time. There's places that become better for various reasons. So that's why you really have to choose carefully here where you decide to live, because let's say one area is picked up as a very popular area to retire. A bunch of people move in. They drive the prices up. The politics of the state or city change, or something, a big company, like one of the things that hit San Diego in 1991. During the recession of that year, the state of California raised income taxes to 11%, and the biggest employer in San Diego, General Dynamics, which employed 16,000 people, said, "We've had it. We're out of here." And they were gone, and it really impacted the economy. So you got to be real careful when you're picking up places where you decide that you want to live. But what I want to talk about today is another alternative to just moving around the United States, because we've talked about that in the past. We'll cover some of that today. But that is something you may not have thought before, and that is living overseas, as well as choosing, let's say, cheaper areas of the United States. This option of moving somewhere else to live where it is cheaper, John, is becoming more and more common, especially if you live in very high tax states or high cost of living states, like think of California, New York, New Jersey, and other areas. And you think of, for example, one of the things we've seen with our clients, because we have clients all over the country, is you see this a lot. A lot of people that live in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, you see, I don't know why East Coast people live in those areas. They tend to move to Florida because, you know, they're close to the ocean, and you move to Florida, it's cheaper, it's warmer, and there's no taxes.
Well, there's a lot of that going on in terms of like moves from your area to our area because of the differential in pricing.
Well, I mean, sure, because California keeps raising taxes. We just passed another $52 billion tax increase on everything from cigarettes to cigars to gasoline to cars, and you name it, we're taxing it. I mean, if it moves, lives, or breathes, or flies, well, we're going to tax it. I'm also seeing this, John, with my own clients here in California, where you can sell, one of the standing jokes in California, a millionaire is a homeowner. So we're seeing a lot of our clients actually sell the big house that they raised the family. And the probably I would say the three most popular areas they're moving to is Arizona is probably at the top of the list, which is amazing. And the other two areas are Nevada and Texas. Now, Nevada and Texas have no income taxes. So you would think that would be number one, but we're seeing more people move to Arizona, where for most individuals that move to Arizona, the tax rate is 2.5% and the top tax rate is 4.5%. So most people, you know, you move from California, you're paying 9.3 or 10.3. You move to Arizona, you're at 2.5% immediately. Number one, it's the cost of living, it's the lower taxes, it's the cheaper housing, it's excellent medical care, it's cultural events, all those kind of things. But what I've seen over time is people on the East Coast tend to move sort of and stay on the East Coast. They move to Florida for the very same reasons. While the same criteria is if you live on the West Coast, we see a lot of our West Coast, especially California clients who are looking for a cheaper alternative to live. Arizona's right at the top of the list, followed by Nevada and followed also by Texas. So cheaper living, no income taxes, and all the same things that you get here in California, and probably even better infrastructure.
So when people are checking out these places, and this changes from year to year, and I guess that will be of some concern because you move into an area and say, golly willikers, it's really cheap here. And boom, within 3 years of having bought, you discover lots of other people discovered the same thing that you discovered. And all of a sudden, things aren't as cheap as you thought they were going to be. And now you're there. So what criteria do you use to determine what's going to be long lasting in this?
Well, I mean, two criteria that you often see that are very common in these studies are U.S. college towns versus coastal areas. Now, when I think of retiring, because I'm into boating and sailing, I think of being on the coast. You think of, gosh, you know, being close to the ocean breezes, the beauty of being close to the ocean. But a lot of times these smaller coastal towns where people can afford to live don't have a lot of the amenities that you get into, for example, a college town where you have a university. You have a university thriving. You have cultural events. You have a lot of times a lot of the universities will have, like, for example, a medical school. So you have medical. So this is according to Forbes that when it comes to coastal living versus college towns beat coastal living areas hands down. And Forbes came up with a list of 25 cities in the U.S. that are more than a third of them, John, are college towns, which really surprised me.
Okay, outside of coastal or college, there must be other criteria. Obviously, those aren't the only places.
Well, I would say, I mean, if you want to boil it down, if people are going to move, number one at the top of the list is cost of living. And more people are choosing to move from expensive areas. I don't care if it's California, it's New York, it's New Jersey, or even Chicago because of crime and cost and taxes. Cost of living is probably at the top of the list. The second thing, as you would imagine, if you are retired, medical care is very important. That's one of the things that makes Arizona very popular. It's not only just the lifestyle, the cost of living, low taxes, but they have some of the top medical facilities. For example, Mayo Clinic has a big clinic in Scottsdale, so that's very popular. So medical care is very important. The other thing that also would come to mind is crime and air quality, because you don't want to move to an area where it's high crime because you don't feel safe. So crime and air quality. And then it also comes to taxes, because, you know, when you live in a state like California, which has the highest taxes overall, I mean, California has high taxes everywhere. We have high income taxes. We have high property taxes. We have high sales taxes. It's expensive to live here, whether you own or rent. Gasoline is more expensive. I mean, when I drive to Arizona, as soon as I cross the border, the price of gasoline drops. Now that we just raised it 20 cents here with the new tax increase, you know, the price of gasoline drops by almost a dollar a gallon. So taxes is also another area.
You know, it's interesting though, Jim, you have to be careful because there are some states who say, come to us, we have no income tax. Yes, but the states that don't have an income tax oftentimes have a very high real estate tax rate or sales tax. And then you see these border wars where people will say, for example, run over from Washington to Idaho because we're right on the border between the two and it's much cheaper here than it is there. Or people in Idaho further south will go into Oregon because there's no sales tax. And yes, you're supposed to pay use tax, but That's sort of nice, isn't it?
We have the same thing going on here in San Diego because we just added $2 to a pack of cigarettes and cigars. And so you have a lot of people crossing the border into Mexico and getting cigarettes. But don't they check people like in Washington if they're coming into your town to avoid paying, you know, the high sales tax? What is it, 10% in Washington? But don't they check them when they go back into the state?
Well, that was the controversy of a number of years back in that the Highway Patrol, the Washington Highway Patrol, was looking for people who were running cigarettes, say, for example, and they'd come over to Idaho and go to the Indian reservation where there's no sales tax whatsoever and things are cheaper, and then take whole carloads of cigarettes and then sell them to their friends in there. So they were stopping cars that they thought might be suspiciously doing that. I think that got challenged legally. You just can't stop things on some kind of a spurious probability like that without having real evidence. But yeah, that's what they were doing.
So there are a number of issues. And one of the things you, as you just mentioned, John, when you're looking at taxes, you can say, oh gosh, if I go to Nevada, there's no income tax, or I go to Texas, there's no income tax. I know in certain areas of Texas, the property taxes could be as much as 2 or 3% of assessed value. So you have to look at those areas. And, you know, it's amazing. They raise taxes, but sometimes, you know, people get resourceful, just as they do now with the latest increase in gasoline taxes and also cigarette taxes. You got people crossing the border to avoid the tax. What I was really surprised when I looked at the top 25 cities to live in the country, one of the areas in your state was listed as one of them, John, Boise, Idaho. So you live in Coeur d'Alene. How does Coeur d'Alene compare to Boise? Is it about the same? In other words, cost of living.
Cost of living is probably about the same. We're really part of the Spokane, Washington economic area. We're just on the other side of the border, you know, a few minutes away. So it's probably the same, although our county is a higher tax rate than a lot of the surrounding counties around us. And it's just become much more activist in terms of civil projects, and so they're taxing more. But it's become nowhere like it is in California.
Well, let's just go briefly. I'm not going to cover all 25, but what really surprised me when I looked at the Forbes study, the number one place to live, according to Forbes, Athens, Georgia. I've never heard of this town. Bella Vista, Arkansas. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Boise, Idaho was number 4. Brevard, North Carolina. Clemson, South Carolina. Colorado Springs. I had a friend that used to live there, and he got a great deal when he bought a home. Fargo, North Dakota. But as far as I know, Fargo is a pretty cold place. I can't imagine retiring there. But you know, the amazing thing is outside of one city was Florida. There was only one city on their Forbes list of 25 cities, and it was in Florida. It was Port Charlotte. Hardly anything that is coastal. So this gets back to what we started out, two criteria, coastal versus college towns. In fact, you would think of, if you take a look at the Forbes 25 cities, you're talking about cities you wouldn't think of. North Carolina, Arkansas, Virginia, Missouri, Kansas, Maryland, Nebraska. You know, these are areas you typically don't think of, oh gosh, that's where I want to retire. Most people, when they think of retirement, they think of California, they think of maybe Arizona now, Florida now, in Texas, but you're not thinking of Arkansas, North Carolina, Missouri, Kansas, or Nebraska. So that was one of the things that really surprised me when I looked at the survey criteria.
You know, okay, those are possible areas inside the United States. Now, I've known people that moved from our area to places like Thailand. One gentleman who had a farmhouse near us said, I can sell this and get a house on the beach with servants for what I can cash out this house for. That's in Thailand. Some of them are going to Latin America. There are some very good locations there. So when you're determining that, how do you evaluate things in foreign countries? Some countries want people to retire, Canadians and Americans, to come there because they bring dollars into the economy. But then you also have to ask about healthcare. And sometimes the healthcare is very good and very cheap.
Well, I mean, when you're looking at overseas, it's pretty much the same. And like anything else, what are we talking about first? We're talking about finding a place to live, whether you're buying or renting. So that is right there at the top of the list, number one. Number two, which is related to it, is property rights and protective laws. So if you buy a property in a foreign country, you want to make sure that that property titling is yours. You can pass it on. You can sell it. And the property, and you have laws that protect you, because especially if you're American, where we have a constitution, a bill of rights. So property rights and protective laws, that's very important. Benefits and discounts, because you got to think about it. When you are uprooting yourself from, let's say, I don't know, you live in California or any place on the East Coast, and you're thinking of going to a foreign country, for example, Mexico. Okay, what are the benefits? How much cheaper is it if I'm going to uproot myself to live there? The other thing that is very important when you're thinking of living in a foreign country, let's just assume that you choose a country that has good weather, so you're going to live there pretty much most of the year unless you're visiting family, is visas and residency, because some countries might say, hey, you can live here, but you can't live here more than 5 or 6 months out of the year. So that may limit your choice there. And of course, cost of living. If you're going to go to a foreign country, remember, and we'll get into this, something that's going to play a very important role when you're living overseas, and this relates to cost of living, is, you know, what does it cost? And remember, you may be getting your income in U.S. dollars, but you're exchanging those dollars into the local currency when you have to pay for rent, or you're buying groceries, or paying for entertainment, or going out to dinner. And the other thing, too, is you have to think about, if you grew up, let's say, in the United States, is how do you fit in with the local culture? Is the culture so different from anything that you lived or experienced here in the United States? Then another item on the list is entertainment and amenities, restaurants, culture, plays, theater, things like that. And of course, healthcare is always important, especially as you retire, because healthcare becomes an important element of cost. And it's another, believe it or not, John, it's one of the reasons people are actually going overseas. And they're now, who would have ever thought you would have heard this? But they're actually going overseas or to a foreign country to get better medical care because it's less expensive. And Mexico comes to mind. We have stories here of people who are crossing the border and getting better medical care than they can get here in California. The other thing is healthy lifestyle. What's the weather like? That's why I was really surprised to see Fargo, North Dakota on the Forbes top 25 list, because, I mean, it gets freezing cold in Fargo. And then finally, the infrastructure and climate. So if you're going to be driving around in a car, you're thinking of climate. And, you know, there's certain places around the equator where, I mean, the summer months where it gets so hot and humid, you're so miserable, you don't want to be there. So it's like you'll see a lot of people in New York, or they'll have two places. They'll have one in Florida for the winter, where they spend there for the winter, but then during the summer months, they'll go back and keep their place, or a smaller place in New York or New Jersey. And I have several clients that have places in Florida, and they've also kept a smaller East Coast home that they have, some kept their original home. So those, John, I think are the top 10 areas. And, you know, a lot of this criteria can be subjective, but the main aim is to help retirees find locations where their dollars go so much further and where they can get the best bang for their buck in terms of thinking of purchasing a residence. So real estate becomes very important. The cost of living, and basically, like anything else, you retire, you want a quality of life. Whatever is important to you, playing golf, going sailing, having cultural amenities, access to a university, restaurants, theater, plays, all those things come into question.
But when we talk about change, Jim, you know, tax laws change over time. Politicians have never been known to sit back and look at large amounts of money and go, oh, how can we get a hold of some of that? In foreign countries, things likewise change over time. The laws change, and sometimes the governments change.
Yeah, you could run into those things. But one of the big issues that I don't see covered as much in these studies and surveys, and think about this if you're an American, is, all right, you're moving to a foreign country because your dollars buy more. So it's cheaper to live in the country. Let's say you're going to Mexico. The key element that I don't hear discussed so much is the value of the dollar. Because, for example, you're retired, you're getting a check from the U.S. government, your Social Security check comes to you in U.S. dollars. You're going to exchange those dollars into pesos. And obviously, the more the peso depreciates against the dollar, well, your dollars buy more goods. But conversely, you don't want to get in an area, and this is one of the risks, for example, that people ran into, that were living overseas, for example, in Europe, because in the last decade, one of the reasons we saw gold go up was the dollar was depreciated because interest rates were lower in the U.S. versus Europe. It's just the reverse today. Interest rates are higher in the U.S. than they are in Europe. And people that maybe went to Italy, went to Spain, went to Portugal as top places to live, all of a sudden, these countries were in the euro. The euro was appreciating. So you got your social security check or your pension check. When you converted it into euros, you actually bought less goods and services. So the value of the dollar in the currency of the country that you're living in is one of the most important areas you have to look at in terms of the stability of that currency. In other words, what is the tendency of that currency against the U.S. dollar? Is it tended over time to trend lower against the dollar, which means that your U.S. dollars are going to buy you more goods and services? Or has the tendency reversed? Has there been a period where it reversed sharply, for example, in the last decade, as it did with the euro? So you really have to be careful and study the currency. Most countries that are on the list, and we are going to have a special guest on the program tomorrow that deals with the top areas to live overseas, but right at the top of the list is countries whose currency tends to be weaker against the U.S. dollar, because the goal is to live cheaper. And the dollar, that's where, let's say you have your investment portfolio in the U.S. where you're getting interest and dividends, you're getting a pension, or you're getting a social security check. Remember, that's all in dollars, and that's going to have to get translated into the local currency. So that is probably a key element.
Yeah, and the area that you have to look at, too, is what we would call global security or global insecurity. You know, it used to be Europe was a pretty popular place. There were places you could find to live, but look at the changes there where there are higher terrorism risk, etc.
You know, that is an area that you have to look at, and that is one of the criteria. There's 25 countries that have been listed as the safest countries to retire to for those very reasons, John, where they have less of those issues, as well as criteria where you look at. Now, we are going to be interviewing tomorrow on the program Jennifer Stevens, who's chief editor at International Living, and she's going to be talking about the 10 best areas to retire. And I don't want to steal the thunder from that interview because you're going to want to listen to it. And six areas out of the 10 are going to shock you, as well as the number one place to retire has been number one for the last 3 to 5 years running, and it's going to shock you. And I can confirm it because I've seen it with actual clients who have retired in this particular area. But that's going to be coming up on the program tomorrow.
Coming up, speaking of tomorrow on the program, Jennifer Stevens from International Living on the 10 best places to retire overseas. I don't think you'll want to miss this one if you've been contemplating that type of thing. Coming up next, our real-life case study. And remember, as you listen to this, this is an hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. The names and circumstances have been changed. We also have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the point that Jim is making. All right, frame the study for us this week.
And this week, we're going to be talking about Thomas Nelson. He is age 66. He plans to retire at the end of this year. According to his health questionnaire, his life expectancy is 87. So about another 22 years. His investment philosophy, moderately conservative, like anybody retired. Income with capital preservation. He is a project manager. Now, Tom worked for a large company for nearly 3 decades. He loves his job. He has a passion for experiencing new places. He spends 3 to 7 weeks a year traveling abroad for vacation. I mean, that is Tom's thing, is international travel. Now, he enjoys the prospect of retiring soon and possibly living abroad for a portion of his retirement years. He's keen on living somewhere in South America. However, he would still like to spend some time in the U.S. each year to visit his friends and grandchildren. He's a little bit unsure whether he can afford to buy a home abroad and how that would impact his retirement. But he loves to be overseas, and he knows that, you know, obviously, if you're thinking of where to live cheaper, the dollar buys a lot more things in South America than it would, let's say, in Europe or Asia. And one of the issues you run into Asia is the travel distance time of flying from Asia to get to the United States. So he plans to retire at the end of the year and is looking for professional guidance to help determine if spending part of his retirement years living outside the United States is a viable option or not. Now, we did a risk profile on him. His risk on a scale of 1 to 10 was a 5. His portfolio was a 6. So his portfolio was invested very closely in terms of Tom's risk profile. Now, what was important to him? He wants to live abroad because this is a guy that just loves to travel. Not outliving his retirement assets, managing taxes and healthcare like anybody else. But more importantly, one aspect he's looking at considering overseas is his dollars will buy a lot more comfortable living style in retirement overseas in Latin America than it would staying here in the States, especially when you think of what it would cost to live here in California. Now, Tom's current budget for essentials is $45,000. $20,000 is discretionary, and that is mainly all travel. That is $65,000. Tom's salary is $102,000, so he's got surplus income at $37,000. Now, looking at retirement, his budget he thinks would be roughly about the same, about 40, so no real change there. However, his Social Security would be $30,000, so we have a $30,000 shortfall. His primary residence is worth about $720,000. Tom's retirement plan is worth a little over $600,000. He has an individual portfolio, which we're going to change around, but it was roughly about almost $600,000. And then he had cash at the banks of about $110,000. So his total assets, investable assets, are about $1,300,000, about $2 million when you consider that his house was about free and clear. So, you know, $2 million, folks, at 3% or 4% here in the U.S., that's, what, $60,000? Think about what that buys overseas. So one of the things we're looking at is living abroad and the implications, managing expenses, and, of course, healthcare. He wanted to keep his cash because Tom was a guy that just, you know, he wants $100,000 in the bank that makes him feel good. It makes him sleep at night. It's different for everybody, but that was his number. So we put him in a balanced account for his retirement account and individual account. That created $38,000 a year of income. Added to his Social Security, that was $30,000. That was $68,000. And this surprised me. I thought when he was thinking about Latin America, he would have thought of Mexico, because I know we have clients that have homes there and they spend part of the year there, and that enables them to live cheaply because, you know, you think of what the dollar buys in Mexico. After a lot of discussion, he decided he wanted to live in Colombia for part of the year. We recommended that he sell his current home and use the proceeds and another $100,000 to buy a studio in Colombia and buy a condo in the U.S. Because we said, look, Tom, you want to have a place. Okay, you want to retire to Colombia, but you want to have a place here that you can go to, especially being near the kids. And so we recommended that he sell the home. And the difference was, by selling his home, he could afford to have two homes, one in Colombia and also one here, but it would be a condo, not a home. We also advised him to keep his monthly expenses to $1,900 while in the U.S. and $3,100 while living in Colombia. This would allow Tom to spend more time and do the things he wanted while living overseas. We also referred him to a law firm that has offices both in the U.S. and Colombia that specializes in working with U.S. citizens living abroad to help with tax and estate planning issues that come up when you live in two countries. Now, by moving to Colombia, Tom was able to receive quality health care, given the World Health Organization ranks Colombia number 6 in the world for quality care. But here was a guy that basically with the proceeds of selling his house here, he could buy a small two-bedroom condo, which is what he ended up doing, and further away from the coast where he sold his house. And then he bought a home in Colombia, and that is where he plans to retire in Colombia, because he said, I could live like a king down there. And from Colombia, I could go to Mexico, I can go to Chile, Argentina, Ecuador, and Brazil, and see the places I love so much. He loves South America. The other thing that helps him is he speaks Spanish, and he's fluent in Spanish, and he's thinking of taking up also Portuguese, because that's a chief language in Brazil. So his retirement plans, John, are going to be living overseas, and it is going to allow him, on his income of roughly $70,000 a year, you think of $70,000 a year in California, that doesn't give you much. You don't live well in California on $70,000. But if you have a condo and he's living in South America most of the time, $70,000, you can live like a king.
And coming up again tomorrow on the program, Jennifer Stevens from International Living on the 10 best places to retire overseas. I'm going to be curious to see what she says about that one. Anyway, Jim, what's coming up in the weeks ahead?
Well, in the weeks ahead, we're taking off. So we're going to be retiring from the program for 2 weeks, but we have some great programs coming up. As we head into the fall, we'll be talking about year-end tax planning and some tax law changes that go into effect and will impact you, and especially a lot of things affecting healthcare. Because if we go another year, let's say that Obamacare is not repealed, if you are one of those 30 percenters on Medicare, you are going to be looking at over 20% increase in your premiums. We talked about 10 states have insurance companies. There were the insurance companies have submitted an increase of 30%. So we'll be also talking about that, year-end distributions, charitable giving, you name it, and stock options for executives. All of that will be coming up in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.